Good morning, Canton.
Good morning, Canton.
Good morning.
And good morning, world. If we have our international listeners out there, if we have anybody in Amsterdam or Australia or Oman that we've had recently, good morning, my fellow comrades. And we are without Tricky Dick today, so we are having the show in solidarity. And for that, my brother, we will also refer to Canton as New Iceland, since our mayor refers to our city as the Utica capital. So we redubbed it New Iceland since we went full democracy. So thank you for that. So Tricky Dick, if you're listening in, Tricky Dick, we miss you this morning. We'll see you soon. We got some local updates. And we have a special guest today, a fellow occupier. His name's Jim, and he's also been an activist in regards against fracking and plenty of other issues. And we'll get to him in a little bit, and he'll be chiming in here probably in the first segment as well. And we'll probably go more in depth with Jim. But good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Okay, so Tara, do you want to start us off with some updates? We have a few things about our GAs have been changed. If you guys want to elaborate on that for a minute.
Basically, the GAs were voted on that we're going to do once a month. We are going to go ahead and continue with this for this next Saturday, the 23rd. It's going to be at noon at the square. Then on the 5th of July, it's going to be at 6 p.m., which is a Thursday. So
we're moving them to weekdays now.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's going to start at 6 with a rally, and then it's going to go into the GA and then Chalkupy.
We're going to Chalkupy on Thursday.
Absolutely.
And that's right after the day we celebrate our independence, correct? July 4th. So perhaps we can have some sort of theme for that, too, or for the Jockupy. That might be a really good idea. So that's exciting. An update on the Canton Marathon. That is also this weekend, sponsored heavily by Chesapeake, our favorite corporation locally here in Canton that, promotes, clean water and clean air. So obviously they would also sponsor a marathon that promotes good health and whatnot too. I'm being very facetious this morning. unfortunately, our relay team was disbanded, but we're still going to have a few fellow occupiers running in that. So come out and show your support for us. We will be running with ban fracking stickers, buttons all over myself. At least I will be that morning to make sure people know why Mike Check's out there running.
And I'm trying to get hold of some stickers to pass out water. This says ban fracking now. I'm just saying.
Fantastic. So we got that. Looking forward to Canton. And we also have the Juneteenth. Is it a festival? Is that what it is?
It's a full program. I'm not sure Willie what's going to be going. I'm going to be leaving here and going straight over there.
But, okay.
It starts today at 11. If you want to fill them in on.
Yeah, the Juneteenth festival locally. It says I got the. Their website up here. It's JuneteenthOhio.net. And it's a festival that celebrates African American independence. And it's based out of the website I have. It's based out of Franklin Park in Columbus, but locally here in Canton, we'll be at
Nemecilla Park.
And it basically, I'm reading from their website now, if I can find the quote. The 22nd annual Juneteenth Ohio Festival is the longest running, fastest growing event in Central Ohio. In the Central Ohio African American community, Juneteenth commemorates President Lincoln's signing of the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st, 1863, an act that began to free African Americans, Black, Indigenous, Natives, and other of the northern continent. The last state of the Union to receive news in this historic event was actually Texas, and that wasn't for another 2 years later about Juneteenth and its the Emancipation. And what President Lincoln did for African Americans in slavery, but that's going to be gone. It's a festival that's been occurring all weekend, but here locally, I think we'll actually have a table set up.
They did not do the table book; they do voter registration.
Oh,
stuff
beautiful.
Like that.
That's
and I think
very...
Norma's going to be talking also. Norma okay. Mills.
Super Norma.
Super Norma. Yes.
Sweet. So we'll have a presence out at Nemecilla, and it looks like to me, on Saturday it says Freedom Day. No, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Let me scroll down here. Oh, Saturday. It's a family reunion Saturday. So it says bring Saxy back to Columbus, Ohio. I think they're going to have like a music festival. This is in Columbus. But there are festivals occurring around Ohio. So go check out the Juneteenth Festival. It's pretty much just looks like about equality and celebrating African American independence, but we could probably even argue that still to this day. But anyways, what else do we have going on? Oh, there's a big action going on in Columbus too. Anybody heard of this?
Oh yeah. I think we're all pretty much going to try to go. So.
Yeah. Jim, are you interested in heading down too to Columbus?
Yeah, I'm looking for a ride, but I'm definitely going to go.
Okay.
Who's this Jim guy?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can we? Do you want to introduce Jim?
Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Why are you here today?
Because you asked me to be here today. And I'm here.
Well, thank you. I guess, like, if we're going to, you know, I guess we'll segue into this. To touch on the Columbus action real quick, and then we'll get into talking with Jim here, who has a plethora of knowledge of, you know, and been an activist. The action on Sunday is, I believe, a national call to ban fracking, and headlining and speaking at that is Josh Fox, I believe, is going to be in attendance, who is the director of Gasland. And you folks can throw some other names out there that I haven't heard, but I also heard Mark Ruffalo is going to be there. Also,
yeah,
the Hulk in the new Avengers, Hulk smash, Mark Ruffalo, ban fracking, baby. Yeah, no. He's been an activist for years, too, as well. So Josh Fox and Mark Ruffalo will be, you know, in our backyard this Sunday in Columbus. I believe, did anybody know the time roughly that it starts? I thought it was 11 a.m. The rally begins in Columbus. We might be able to follow up on that. But back to Jim. Jim, so why, you know, you've been, we talked about apathy last week, and not necessarily worldwide, because we see, you know, Canada, you know, has been astounding lately, and there have been marches in Mexico City that have not been reported, you know, in Venezuela, you know, but I know specifically the marches in Mexico and Canada were surrounding pretty much students' rights, you know, student tuition increases. That's what sparked both of them. But so we talked about apathy here in Ohio and how we called for the students to, you know, kind of, you know, take it upon themselves to march for the same exact reasons. And we don't have that. And there's plenty of other reasons why. But we were basically toying around with the notion that, is it apathy or is it fear of acting or is it a little bit of both? I mean, since Jim, you've had, you know, you can talk a little bit about yourself, but, you know, you're very wise and you've been involved for a very long time in various issues. What do you think it really is, you know, around here, or maybe perhaps in Ohio or in the United States, that, you know, we really don't see quite the size and protest of that we see in other countries in the world?
Well, I think that until people are directly affected themselves, you know, by anything, whether it's an environmental issue or whether it's a student issue, they tend not to want their voices heard. In the case of students, you know, with the tuition hikes and everything, you would certainly think that they would want to be out and involved. I don't have the answer to that. I know back in the 70s when we were demonstrating at Kent State University here in Ohio and occupied the construction site of a gymnasium that was going to be built on the site of the shootings, the 1970 shootings there, where 13 students were shot and 4 killed. There was a lot of student apathy with that. I mean, we had a pretty good community, Tent City there, which we occupied the construction site for 65 days, I think it was.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What year was that again?
That was 1977.
Okay.
And, but mostly the students just don't seem to want to be involved in it. I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't understand the apathy. I have, for example, my sister, who has, you know, two daughters, and they're now in close to their 30s, and they have a couple of children. And you would think that generation of people would be the ones that would be rising up, because those that have children, it's going to be their children's lives that are most affected, but you just don't see it. You know, they're not directly affected by it. They'd rather just pretend that
everything's
good. My sister told me one time, she goes, "Well, I know things are bad out there, and I think it's necessary that there are people speaking their minds and demonstrating." But she says that's for somebody else to do, not me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a general attitude that a lot
really?
Of people
I'm getting
have,
the same
you know.
Thing.
Like, kind of, you know,
I'm glad you're doing
somebody
this.
Else, somebody else do it. you know, or somebody else will get around to do it and fix it. You know, yeah.
I'm behind you, but I won't get out in front of you, and I won't.
Yeah.
I won't march with you.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
I see that a lot. I'm hearing.
Well, where do you see it at, Tinelli? I mean,
you know, like my mom, she likes what I'm doing, but at the same time, she doesn't want to get involved. She says that the whole political thing is kind of scary to her, and she's proud of me, but at the same time, it's just nothing that she would want to do. And you know, she talks about me all the time about what we do. So, I mean, but at the same time, I mean, she gets a lot of her people she talks to say the same thing. So it's about getting the right people together and finding something like he said, something that it's gonna hurt them if they don't do something.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I don't know. Like the reason why, you know, I love this radio show and what it's becoming, because it really is a form of protest in a way, because we are reporting on things that the mainstream media just will not even blip, you know, in our country. And what we talked about a few weeks ago, Canada released a press release to the English mainstream media, pretty much calling them out, or how they spin stories and feed more off of the negative and fear mongering rather than the positives. And Canada just kept referring back to you know, our mainstream media in the United States, basically saying that, you know, why are you guys leaving out important things? Because we've been marching in for one word at the end of the day. And this is what I love about Canada, how they've been kind of like, you know, in the spotlight right now, just showing people that you can move things, because they've been using one word. And we talked about it last week, love. You know, they've been using love, march with love. You know, they expect to get tear gassed every night. They expect to get, you know, raided every night, but they come back with more love. And I believe on May 22nd, they had over 300,000 people marching through Montreal. And I don't know if you've seen the pictures, but
it's overwhelming.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it all started
with love.
You know, well, initially, well, yeah, exactly. You know, that's a weapon that we can use that's hard to defend. You know, if you just keep meeting that, you know, violence with love. You know, we even saw it in Frankfurt, Germany, where were you here, Tinelli, when we talked about how there were 20,000 people marching in Germany, and they kept, you know, using the same notion, love, 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 and the 5,000 riot police finally stopped, took off the riot gear, and turned around and marched with them.
That would be
amazing. So it turned
into
25,000 people. Yeah.
Oh.
So it happens. But again, what Canada is saying is that our mainstream media won't report that. Why would they report that? You know, they don't want people in the United States doing the same very, very same thing. But back to apathy, you know, for a second, I think the mainstream media might have a little sway on that too. You know, if people are constantly addicted to their TV, you know, watching what the mainstream media puts out, maybe that's another reason why people aren't acting.
It's, you know, Mike, check that scene that goes back again, turn off the televisions, turn off the radio, and tune into the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's going to get stuff done. Just because you sit down and watch the TV or listen to the radio, it really doesn't, it doesn't get us anywhere. I mean, yeah, we see what's going on, but it's only what they want to show us. So, I mean, I love the fact that we're going to keep it real with the listeners. So,
yeah, you know, we there have been sparks here and there in Canton. You know, with the End the Violence protests, you know, we saw, you know, a bunch of people. You know, when a couple of the teenagers were shot and killed due to gang violence here. So the potential is here, but, you know, is Ohio just that depressed too at the very same moment? And I mean, mm-hmm. And not to mention, you know, what happened with Cleveland, you know, and the whole bomb thing, that kind of set some people back too. That just didn't affect Cleveland. I mean, that kind of affected everybody, you know, pushed everyone, took a step back for a second.
Yeah, you saw how the media handled that and how they've handled this whole thing, you know. I mean, whether it's true or not, people don't want to be associated with the description that's been given by mainstream media of the people who are involved,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a bunch of communist, hippie, pro-violent people.
Anarchists, too.
And they've really nurtured that.
Yeah, I feel like the word anarchy now is like the new Red Scare, you know, throwing that word out there. Not like socialist or communist, now it's anarchist, you know.
But it's not necessarily a bad thing.
What's that?
Anarchy.
In itself, no. If you read it, I mean, Gandhi always said he was an anarchist, you know. He believed in autonomous, independent people cohabitating together.
That's exactly what it is. But
as Tyrone Semper's raising his pen at me.
Kill anyone you don't like, right?
No, not that.
Well, they're using...
But that's what the mainstream media, apparently, that's their version and definition
right,
of anarchy.
Right, exactly.
So.
But if the people actually read the definition of it, it's not a bad thing. In fact, maybe when we come back into our second segment, we'll have a definition that we can...
I'm sure we could dig something up. But yeah, just to, again, follow up on apathy, I don't know what it is. I think, you know, for me personally, and I'm sure there's other people in the room that can attest to this before we go do a music break, like one of the biggest things that moved me and made me really get involved was, you know, you can tell me, you know, all you want about issues, but if you've never experienced a march, if you've never experienced, you know, maybe 100 people, maybe 1,000 people marching together with the same thoughts and the same reasons for the same, you know, conclusions, it's a powerful, powerful thing, and it's actually an exciting experience. You know, if people want to elaborate, I mean, I marched with 10,000 people, 10,000 students last year in D.C. In regards to environmental issues. It was called Power Shift, and it was a life changer for me. You know, marching through the streets of, you know, our capital.
Right.
It was pretty cool. Do you guys have any stories that you can share that you remember that there was maybe like one experience that went, wow, you know. I had no idea that we were maybe this powerful, you know, or that we can make a difference. And we can ponder that. Maybe we'll go to a quick musical break here. Tyrone Semper, our techie's back in studio now. So we're going to take a quick musical break. This is Revolution Radio on RadioFreeCanton.net. You can check us out on Twitter at Revolution Radio with a zero and our Tumblr at RevolutionRadioWithAZero.tumblr.com. We'll be right back. the bear, Secret Country. This is Revolution Radio, RadioFreeCanton.net.
90.7
here locally here in Stark County. You can catch us on Twitter at Revolution Radio with a zero and revolutionradio.tumblr.com. You can also find a bunch of other articles that we've been posting. So back to what we were talking about, we had Jim and Tinelli and perhaps Tyrone too, if he wants to chime in, talking about, you know, perhaps something that moved them and motivated them or showed them that you can make a difference within a march, you know, or within a protest. And I'll give the floor to you guys if you want. Do you remember a specific moment or a march or just something that made you go, I have to act, or it gave you confidence in being an activist and what you're doing?
Well, T. Nelly actually had a wake-up call. It was kind of ironic that I missed a Sunday service. I went to church online, and my internet went down. I decided to pray and ask God where he wanted me to go. And the following Sunday, I mean, this is a week-long praying thing and fasting, but the following week, I basically tuned into my normal Sunday service, and it was talking about changing and rebuilding the community. At that point, it was like God had spoken to me. Following that, Ron John, the football coach at McKinley, he was fired, and I decided to go ahead and hold a sign outside my job, and I did that for about a week.
Just by yourself?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome,
I was
Tara.
On the clock, man. I left for a quick rally, but I was on the clock. And
I'll tell you what, if I got paid to protest,
it was awesome.
Sign me up for that.
I collected about 500 signatures.
Good for you.
While I was at work, I couldn't sell phones, but hey, I got signatures. So then after that, I was like, it kind of pushed me into something a little bit different, and I decided that I was going to check into this little Occupy thing that had been surfacing through the internet. One of my buddies from San Fran sent me a link. I checked it, and I agreed with everything that was on that paper, and I was like, man, where do I find you guys? So that following Saturday, I looked you guys up, I found you, and I came in and sit into a meeting. It was kind of awkward at first, not knowing what was going on, mm-hmm. not knowing the hand signals or anything like that, not knowing how to speak or whatever. And I had an opportunity. I've had a lot of stuff going on with the courts and the kids, and I heard of something called Occupy the Courts. It was a last-minute decision after that. I was either going to go to Tennessee or I was going to go to Washington, D.C. So I decided last minute. I made a phone call to one of my girlfriends, found out she didn't have any kids, went and picked her up, and headed off to Washington, D.C. right before a horrific snowstorm. So I get to Washington, D.C., found the Occupy. I walked all the way through Washington, D.C. The place is amazing, and I finally found the occupation. I went to... was it Camp Freedom? What is it?
I'm not sure.
There's the one at Campment, and I found them. They were welcoming. They were amazing. The people there, they started rallying, and we marched. They stopped traffic. There had to have been like 2,000 people. It was right after Occupy Congress. So following Occupy Congress came Occupy the Courts. They were marching for... the personhood.
You're talking about the corporate personhood.
Yeah. There was a big, huge thing, and I actually, you know, walking with them, it was empowering. Like, it was like a high, and mm-hmm. it felt like something like, this is something I have to do. If I don't do it, and I still feel the same way. I love the fact that when people rally together, when we march together, it's like a sign of unity. In solidarity with whatever issue my neighbor might have, I can walk with them. I can speak out with them. I might not have the exact same opinion as them, but coming together and actually trying to get stuff done. Since then, I think they've signed some stuff to eliminate the personhood to a certain extent, but corporations do still play a big part in everything. So it does make a difference.
Yeah, again, in America, we're not in the Matrix. Corporations are people. pizza is a vegetable and GE makes corn.
And I can't say that I am an anarchist.
Yeah. I mean, this is the truth. Sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I can't say that I'm an anarchist, but I do agree with their beliefs, you know.
Well, to touch on that before we, because I want to hear what Jim has to say too, but we looked up the actual the meaning of anarchy, and it's from ancient Greek anarchia, which actually means mainstream media, that anarchy is an absence of a leader.
That's, I lead myself.
To sum it up.
I lead myself. I can't side with the political party. I can choose my own religion, but I lead myself. Every single day I wake up, I'm not being led by anybody. It's my actions and my voice that are going to lead me.
Right. Jim, do you have anything that you can remember? I mean, I know you said you were very active, you know, in the 70s as well, and I thank you for your service too, because I know you're a veteran as well, and you know, you're very fortunate, because most veterans don't get half the half the praise, especially for people who served in Vietnam, correct? You know, they just have an awful stereotype. But, you know, if you could elaborate a little bit more, because we've talked about this before, and I love hearing about, you know, what you've done, you know, throughout your lifetime and what you've been through. And if you want to elaborate a little bit, or if there's anything that you remember that just made you really feel empowered.
Well, I can say that being in Vietnam was a turning point in my life in several ways, and I think that's the thing that made me wake up. I grew up in the 1950s and the 1960s in the wake of World War II, and you know, almost every man at that time was a real hero who fought in the war, and that was an instance where you could say that the nation was at war, because it wasn't just the military that was involved. You know, there were a lot of things that were rationed. There were, people brought scarce materials, pots and pans, and piled them up, and the whole country made real sacrifices. And so growing up in the wake of that, you know, being in the military was... You know, you were a true hero.
Yeah.
Vietnam erased all of that for me. It was a real awakening, and I realized at that point that our government wasn't what it was cracked up to be. And so coming back in the wake of that was a radicalizing moment for me, you might say. And then I got out in 1972, and in the ensuing years went to Kent State University, and in 1977... when that gymnasium struggle started. I think I can recall one time we had another Vietnam veteran who was there with us, name of Ron Kovic. And if you're familiar with the movie Born on the 4th of July, where Tom Cruise played Ron was with us at that tent city. And we had a meeting one night, a program, and everybody's spirits were kind of down. We knew that the contracts were going to be consummated soon. And everybody's spirits were down. Nobody quite knew what to do. And Ron got up at the end of the meeting and gave a very inspiring speech and said, you know, let's get out there. So we went out, maybe 25 or 30 of us, and marched around the campus in Kent. And that was very inspiring, you know. We expected people to be throwing stuff out the windows at us. Instead, they were putting speakers in the windows and playing Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Four Dead in Ohio.
Oh, my God.
And by the time we got back to the campus center there at the student center, we had 300 people.
My God.
That, to me,
so they came out and joined you.
That had to have been really good.
I think that's what needs to happen around here, too. People just need to say, stop, let's just go. Let's don't think about it. We all want the same things at the end of the day. We want contentment. We want peace of mind. We want happiness, and we don't want to live with oppression, any sort of type. You know, if we complicate it more than that, you know, then that's what will divide people. But that story alone, was it a? I think I remember seeing a picture, and I don't know if it was on Kent State, but I think it was at other universities during maybe that same during the 70s, where they were hanging sheets out their window saying, you know, pretty much like saying in solidarity with Kent State, you know, we don't want this to become the next Kent State too. And we all know, you know, the unfortunate tragic events that occurred. on that day. I was lucky enough, actually. Did you happen to know, I'm going to toss a name out there, and he was actually there for the shootings, and he was a grad student at the time, and he retired from Kent, and he taught sociology. His name is Dr. Jerry Lewis, and he actually wrote and published theory, and I can't get into the specifics. It's been a while, but I just remember, like, I took a couple of his classes, and he always made it a point, you know, to take at least a week or two to talk specifically about Kent State. Like, you know, I feel like that's so important, especially being a student there, to understand the history behind, you know, that event for good or bad, you know. That's pretty inspiring, Jim. You know, you started off with 30 and ended up with 300 marching around campus.
I was gonna make a kind of suggestion. I mean, if it's about people not thinking, and they're pulling people, they start off with 30. We have what, maybe 25 in our group that are active. I mean, if we all got together and maybe marched through the actual streets instead of maybe downtown, maybe we can occupy the neighborhoods, bring people right out of the houses.
Yes, and welcome. By the way, we have our
Tricky
guest,
Dick.
Tricky
Woo!
Dick, is in the house. He had he was out. Well, go ahead. Good morning. Good morning, Mr.
Good morning,
Mr.
Canton, and
in
the world.
You're good.
Okay.
We can hear you.
There. No. Yeah. It helps when you have headphones on.
You know, we've been.
Welcome back. I know it's been a while.
Yeah. How was Mexico?
Amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you down there? Did you experience any of the? Because I know there have been some. There's some protests down there.
They're huge.
I know, right? Like, and nobody's
tell us about it.
Nobody's
Come
talking
on.
About it.
I mean, all the way down Reforma. I mean, if anybody's been to Mexico City, they have this great like series of buildings and you know things where they're all down this avenue called Reforma. And the main three, because I could go on, because there's statues that keep on going down Reforma forever, are the Castillo, then they call it the Monument of the Hero Soldier of the Hero Children.
I love that, which, by the way.
Well,
just wait.
There's a story about that, and it's it doesn't really speak well of the United States, but and then then it goes down this alley, this long avenue to the Gate of the Lions, and then from there. It goes out into the main avenue. It goes down the center of Mexico City, Reforma, which leads to this huge, pillar and a golden statue of this angel with a laurel and all these other things called the Angel of Independence.
Amazing.
And all around the Angel of Independence is usually where, like, all of the, whenever there's a protest, that's where it happens. And so it was, I mean, I showed up there for completely other purpose, and then it's just all of a sudden it's like there was just massive amounts of people that were all around there, and then all the way down the streets, and then filling the streets on either side, going both into the neighborhood of Polanco on one side of the street, and then the other side of the street is the Zona Rosa, and just filling, you know, both sides, and they kept on holding all these signs saying, 132, like, Yo Soy 132. I am 137. I am 132, and what that was in reference to is that there was like these 131 students who started a protest against all sorts of different things, but mostly about I don't even know where to begin. But they have four people running for president, and it's kind of apparent that they're not necessarily happy with any of them. But the one in particular is representative of the PRI, which was a political party that was in charge, oppressively in charge of Mexico for 70 years. And there's just all sorts of corruption going on there, and people are very upset. And so this student group of 131 students, you know, started this whole thing, and it became like this big deal. And so now you have like these thousands upon thousands. Some people are saying like 90 to 120,000 people there on that particular day. Saying that we are the 132nd, because the whole story was that 131 students caused an awful lot, you know, started like this whole thing. And so you have like 90 to 120,000 people saying that we're the 132nd.
That's great.
I just find it so ironic that Canada's big movement has started with students, you know, pretty much they were on strike for over 100 days, and now Mexico is pretty much saying for the kind of the same reason students were out there, and that's what got more people involved.
Yeah. By and large, I mean, there's so many issues. I mean, down in Mexico.
What are
I mean,
some of the main ones for people that don't know in Mexico? Because obviously, our mainstream media does a really good job of telling people and informing people.
Well, one of the actually, they have similar issues. I mean, most. I mean, as like reading a bunch of the signs, you know, and as much as I could read them, and a lot of them were complaints about the media, and a lot of the media,
you know,
right, and a lot of the media is controlled by money, who is controlled by the PRI, which is, of course, you know, this oppressive political party that managed to stick around and kind of reconstitute itself, and they have like this, you know, young, good-looking, you know, guy who's running for president, and they have like all these signs that
they
like,
have just, corporate that personhood too. Are you saying that they have corporate personhood too?
They have
umbilical cords now, right?
Something like that.
They have pulled the belly button. Well, they were born
legally.
Well, did you
I'm
see
not exactly sure the status?
Well, did you see McCain?
But the corruption is the biggest issue.
You see about McCain and Ron, pretty much calling out Romney Super PAC, saying corporations are not people.
They're not people. Well, where are their belly buttons?
Well, this
man?
Is big for McCain to be saying something.
They definitely
like
don't have no hearts.
It is for somebody. Yeah, no.
You might create a little bit of a divide there. You know, in regards to if we're going to divide it up into two political parties, you know, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, whatever you want to call. But yeah, I saw that he was pretty much calling out the super PAC saying, no, they're not. You know, you guys are, it's not what they are. I just skimmed an article and saw that, which is kind of relevant. Especially, is McCain still the governor of Arizona?
No, he's a senator, senator
okay.
of Arizona, and
I'm so glad you're back.
Used to be, I know he has been leader of several different committees. I'm trying to think, like, is he like the head of the Armed Services Committee or something like that in the Senate? I don't recall.
I'm not sure.
School, so,
but let's back to frack. Or go ahead, Eric, if you Tricky Dick, if you want to finish.
No. I just wanted to. Remark on. I mean, I walked in while Jim was talking about an awful lot of things, and it was I don't know. It was great to hear the story, and I wish I had a little bit more context to start going off on this. So I don't want to.
Well,
the show's already got a flow. So
we'll just involve you. What we were talking about is what was our empowering moment to bring us, because we're talking back about apathy again.
We followed up on that, and we've kind of gotten into this nice discussion about what empowered us to actually, you know.
There were when I was in New York with the Occupy out there.
The big one, the Occupy Wall Street, right?
Right. The one that was formerly based out of Zuccotti Park. They called it the moment of radicalization, and everybody had their story. What was their moment of radicalization? And to a lot of people, it was this euphoric moment for them, where some people, this one guy described it, he said that it was bigger to him than when he came out, because he's gay, and he said that his moment of radicalization and moving on was bigger than that.
Well, if that goes to show you what the movement really is, that it is something more. You know, something higher than even what people may perceive, that it's just all about human beings at the end of the day. You know, it's just all about human beings
coinciding, coming together,
getting along, you know, and dropping all the minor things that separate us. You know, and if that's something, especially for somebody, you know, who's gay, and that is an important part, you know, and a pivotal moment in their life to come out and experience that. But for him to say that was his moment of radicalization is
the movement.
Again, inspiring.
Oh, yeah.
I would add to that, too, that your moment of radicalization, as I was saying, can also be a devastating moment when you come to a realization that, you know, the picture is not the one that's been painted for you. It's something different.
I see it takes some time
to recover from that.
I think what that did it for me, along with, you know, marching through the streets of D.C. last year with 10,000 students, was amazing and empowering. But then it was when we entered the Department of Interior, you know, because people were protesting this thing called fracking, which, like, literally this weekend I was getting a crash course on all this stuff. I went from, like, you know, Friday not knowing a whole hell of a lot till Monday pissed, you know, ready to march with these people. So we got to the Department of Interior with 5,000 of us. We split off into two groups. One headed towards the White House. The other one went to the Department of Interior. But to watch my, you know, fellow comrades and students that traveled all across the world, you know, students – or not across the world, all across the nation – into D.C. and watch people that I met over the weekend that were willing to sacrifice their student scholarships, you know, willing to sacrifice, you know, not one but two felony counts that they were threatened with by the – I was looked at – an FBI agent looked right at me and said, if you don't get out of here in 5 minutes, you're going to be locked up with them too and with two felony counts. I said, I can't do this on my first protest ever. You know, I can't.
Well, when we took over the actual steps of the Supreme Court, they basically said the same thing, but we kept inching up. One step by one step. So I feel you there, Mike Chegg.
Well, yeah, but so back to Jim, though, you know, a moment, you know, of radicalization that's, you know, that can also almost traumatize you. I think watching people younger than me, you know, demonstrating their democratic rights and, you know, willing to occupy space and go to jail for this really woke me up at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that it does. And that's a big sacrifice. I mean, even my involvement at Kent State with that tent city, I was fortunate that you know, I was arrested along with 192 other people for contempt of court for violating a court order to vacate that construction site, and we refused to, and we were all arrested and taken away. And it did, in the short run. I remember looking for work out in California, and prospective employers, you know, getting down two-thirds in the interview asking me if I'd ever been arrested, and me saying yes, and them saying, I'm sorry, we don't have anything for you. But, yeah, it's been my experience, too. And you think now, I don't know if other people have noticed this or not, but it seems to me that there are a lot more laws these days that result in felony records than there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's I think that's part of the
plan. It's a government thing where they're creating these new laws and they're trying to stop us from voicing our opinion, I believe, because they're scared of what we're going to become. So they create these situations with the, you know, the embedding of undercover. And then they do something, and then they make a big example of it, and then they write it into law. It says now people who protest around political parties are now terrorists or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, you know the age of agent provocateurs is not over.
Right.
No. Yeah. And to elaborate back to the felony counts, you know, that just, you know, if you're tagging people left and right with felonies today, then that leads to, you know, the joblessness. How easy is it for them to find a job once they, you know, get back out instead of, you know, rehabilitating them and getting them back out as a functional citizen in society? They have to live with a felony account, which means they're pretty much shackled.
Yeah, and every crime in D.C. is pretty much a felony.
Right.
So just regular misdemeanor prostitution is a felony, and they just use it as a tool to suppress somebody. And if you go to D.C., there's, for instance, there's prostitutes everywhere, you know.
Well, I think the other thing to kind of take into account here is the fact that the more felons that are thrown in prison, the richer the people who own the privately owned prisons get.
That's another thing.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Kasich, by the way, for privatizing prisons and making money off people getting imprisoned.
I was going to say, you know, even for the youth, I mean, we have kids that are out there whose parents don't work, and they're thrown out onto the streets to make money, hustling, you know, selling drugs, stealing whatever they can just to survive. They get into the court system, they go to jail, they come out, they have to pay restitution. How are they supposed to pay restitution if they're cracked with a felony? They can't get a job. They're 13, 14, 15, all the way up to 18 years old with a felony. They can't pay restitution. This is, you know, something that I believe firmly in. We have to be able to create a model for the kids to get out of that system and get them off the streets in order for us to help them. And, I mean, taking it back to the poverty. I mean, you don't have jobs if you have a felony.
Well, I think, too, you can't own a gun if you're a felon, and I believe it's still the case. I might be wrong about this, but I believe it's still the case that your voting rights are suspended if you have a felony record. I know it used to be. That's not true anymore. I'm just being told that this is no longer the case. Never mind.
If you served your time and you've paid your debt to society, then you, in fact, have the right to vote.
Yeah, but you don't have a right to a job. Go figure.
Well, yes, but but you do have a right to vote. And so if you are a felon that's out there and somebody's telling you that you can't vote, do not listen to them. It's a lie. You can vote.
Anyway,
it's important that you do so and not let other people tell you not to.
Yeah, and in solidarity with Jim and his experiences at Kent State, I think we're going to take a quick musical break here. If Tyrone can come back in here, I got a song set up for us here. I got it here. A little Four Dead in Ohio, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Revolution Radio, Radio Free Canton.
90.7.
Gives me goosebumps, folks. I'm a Kent State alumni as well, graduated last year, and that song, you know, if you listen to the words, it says it all. It says it all. So now we're going to change gears here for our last segment before we end our beautiful show. We're going to touch back on fracking here. We're going to touch on some local issues then issues in Ohio. Jim, again, you can elaborate. You were talking about a plant out in Masson called the Baker's Hughes plant, and it's been on hold. If you could elaborate on how that's connected to fracking.
Well, this was a plant. They were pretty vague about what was actually going to go on there, but it was a big deal in Masson. They were going to build this plant that they said it would employ between 500 and 700 people, all related to the fracking industries. One of the things that I recall that the company was going to do was produce fracking fluids, and so this was a big thing for Massillon. There were several big things going on for Massillon, and the city was really getting excited about it. They thought they had a big lease deal that was going to be worth about $500,000 in the golf course there that the city had purchased several years ago, and they were having trouble with the paying the bonds on that. And then they got word about this company that wanted to move into town, and Well, they found out that they didn't own the mineral rights to the golf course, and so that money went away. And then the Baker Hughes company, which is only second Halliburton in terms of the size of the company that's involved in oil and gas exploration, pulled out indefinitely on the plant. There was also a company down in Carrollton, Ohio, that was a big deal down there. They were going to build a plant, and that was going to employ 200 people, and they pulled out altogether. So all the dollar signs that a lot of the local people were seeing from this is going away.
I just want to point out.
Yeah. No, I can't. No? We got nothing for you. You can take that mic there.
Testing.
Nope.
All right, I'll use this one then. I just want to point out that the solar panel, that the $600 million GE solar panel plant that Maslin didn't go after, is in fact going in to Colorado, who got it, who was awarded it, and those jobs are in fact going to happen, and just point it out. Fracking jobs, a bunch of, as it's turning out to be a bunch of lies or half truths at the very least, about big plants and all these people being employed and yada yada yada, and everybody's like laughing at alternatives. Well, guess what? That's where the real employment's happening. Even here in Ohio, has the most. I think they have the most employees in windmill manufacturing of any state, and has the what's going to be the second largest solar panel plant for First Solar up near Toledo. Or Bowling Green, I should say. And so, we should think about where the real jobs are. Not where the jobs that, not these fake jobs that people say are going to happen, but let's talk about real jobs. Ohio's worried about real jobs, real manufacturing, jobs that are going to stay. Alternative energy is the way to do it.
I agree. Another thing that, the leases are only calling for 5 years. I know that Jim can elaborate on that. So 5 years of them having these temporary jobs. Yeah, may give them fast money now, but in the long run, what's going to happen to their jobs? It's going to devastate our community again.
And another issue on the jobs front, we have the Pipefitters Union from Canton here demonstrating at the site of a pipeline construction because they brought in out-of-state contractors to build the pipeline.
It says in the Farm and Dairy, some stuff about that, talking about how they brought people in from Colorado, Golden, Colorado, Houston, Texas. And even though Kasich said that he does not want any foreign workers on wellheads, these people who come from Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, and Kentucky are those distant foreigners of Texas. I mean, they're still bringing them in, and they're giving them the jobs for the pipeline. And they're actually calling for the signing of a petition. You can go go to it at nopipeline1@gmail.com, and you can send them an email, and that way you guys can get the petition to sign it.
That's
wow.
Your Tricky Dick's having some technical difficulties here.
I just said Casey lied. Big surprise.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's a perfect segue into another thing that I wanted to mention real quick. So this past week, there was a law passed called Senate Bill 315. This is on Don't Frack Ohio's website, I believe. It's don'tfrackohio.org, and it's posted to our Twitter right now already and on our Tumblr. But basically, Senate Bill 315 eliminates all public notice for fracking well permits, opens gaping loopholes in disclosure laws, and allows fracking companies to keep toxic chemical cocktails secret from communities, establishes the lower tax rates on gas industry in the country, and gags doctors from discussing the health impacts of fracking. So this is a law in Ohio now, folks, that doctors, if a patient comes in and is experiencing symptoms from being exposed to any type of chemical in the air or water, and a doctor can trace it to that, by law they cannot report it or even tell, I believe, the patient.
Yeah, that's kind of infringing upon my rights, I think. I mean, if something happens to me,
that's by far infringing upon your rights.
I mean, come on, if I get sick, I want to know what got me sick. And I mean, they shouldn't be able to not tell me what's going on with me.
Yeah, that's what a doctor's supposed to do. You know, he's supposed to be able to diagnose and enlighten you on what you're suffering from, so then you can properly medicate or give you the proper medicine to overcome.
Let me weave an analogy. Maybe, you know, check me if my logic's off on this, but wouldn't it be similar to, like, say you're a woman, you're raped, and you become pregnant, then the doctor is forced by law to not tell you who the father is. Wouldn't that kind of be analogous?
That's kind of similar. Kind of.
I mean, we're speaking in metaphors here. You know, but, I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, whatever caused your condition, you're not allowed to know, you know, what actually caused it or who caused it or whatever the case might be. And that's a violation. That's a huge violation. And I guess what I'm basically saying is that I put that violation on the level of rape.
I think that once the people start figuring out what's actually going to happen to them, that we're going to get a lot of people waking up over this issue. I mean, you can't tell a doctor to tell us that we can't know what's going on with us. I mean, there's something wrong with that picture, and the people need to get up and stand up.
Well, I hope so. I mean, but how many things has to happen before people wake up? I mean, how many years of just out-and-out lies of the deterioration of our civil rights, of so many different things? I mean,
this is beyond civil rights for fracking, in my opinion. These are the unalienable rights that we should be guaranteed, or human rights, if you want to call them that. You know, this is
right. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I mean, you can't do any of those if your water's poisoned, your land is poisoned, the air is poisoned, and you can't sell your land.
Your cattle's dying.
Basically, your livelihood's destroyed. Yeah. I mean, basically, the basic premise as to the reason why this country was formed to begin with is at risk through fracking.
By the way, I just remembered this too. I believe it's next week. There's going to be a panel discussion at Stark State, and our friend Rhonda Rita at OJEEP will be there. And I'm thinking about going and just smiling at her because she's seen me a couple of times. And this lady, you know, who advocates for education of oil and gas, pretty much that's what her job is, to educate the public. Jim and I have both.
Is it lies or is it real education?
Oh my gosh, Jim's been to both. I've listened to this lady speak twice, and I mean, even Jim can attest to this, that she even lied about her own education. She lied about her degree. She didn't lie about where she went to school, but it changed from two different. From we were at North Lawrence one night, and then I believe Canal Fulton, maybe like a month later, and I asked her the very same question, and she changed her answer. So if she's willing to minorly, you know, throw in a half-truth or lie about her education, then why can we believe anything else that she says? Or people that are educating the public on the safety, you know, and how, you know, good this is for us. Not to mention she goes into schools and distributes these coloring books.
Oh, yeah. Our very own Tricky Dick took out of a couple of them. I love it.
Some of the chemicals too. This is an article from Wake Up World, and we even have a quote from the executive director of the Food and Water Watch, which has been militant against fracking. You know, they totally just say, you know, no, go for the top. We don't want a moratorium. You know, ban it. And there's a list of some of the chemicals here too. But I want to read her quote real quick. This is Winona Hodder, the executive director of Food and Water Watch. She says, "Fracking is a dangerous American export that should be viewed critically by countries just starting to engage the practice. Modern drilling and fracking have caused widespread environmental and public health problems, as well as posed serious long-term risks for vital water resources. While oil and gas industry is profiting off this technology, it has been a disaster for Americans exposed to its pollution." You know, and some of the chemicals that actually have been tied to this, you know, 99% of the fluid is water, but it's that other 1% that's just mashed up this, you know, chemical cocktail. You know, some of them are methanol, diesel fuel, formaldehyde, lead, you know, so ingesting all these, you know, a lot of these are well-known carcinogens that can cause, you know, anything from respiratory tract irritation, nausea, vomiting, fever, to even ingesting high amounts of formaldehyde and lead that can cause death and brain disorders. This could be potentially contaminating our water.
And fertility issues also.
And recall also that a lot of these radioactive materials that are buried deep in the ground will come back up with that 40 or so percent of fracking fluid that comes back up.
Hey, you know, I'm willing to take all that in for a guy from Arkansas to have a job for 4 years here.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Oh, guys, I wanted to mention this too. Have you guys remember Dallas, the show Dallas when we were kids?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, they come up with a new Dallas now, and it's actually educating people on the real fracking. You've got two people or a set of family that are dividing over fracking or not fracking. It's kind of cool. So if you guys get a chance to check that out, I'd like to get some input. So why don't you guys try to tune into that for a second?
Yes, everybody, go watch TV.
Yeah.
Turn on your TV.
You know, even disturbing things like this, like, you know, lead, it's previously found, this is back to the article of Wake Up World, it said lead is even found in 500 popular lipsticks, you know, and lead is also, according to this is a carcinogenic heavy metal found in paint, building, you know, and other materials. So women are putting that on their lips, you know, that's also has lead in it.
And then they kiss you. Wow.
You know, this is, it's disturbing.
So wait, I'm confused. They put lipstick on fracking?
Lead has previously been found in lipstick. Now, God, you know, the show was going great until Tricky Dick got here. No. No. You know, and even, you know, if people can't relate to the environmental issues, you know, Forbes released an article too, and there was an analyst that, you know, really dug into Enron, and he was comparing it to Chesapeake, and basically, you know, the numbers that, you know, kind of bothered me was that they're spending way more than they're making. You know, I believe it's around $12 billion, but they've only brought in $2 billion so far. So how are they even staying afloat? You know, these are things that, you know, I'm not financially or economically minded, but that's like how are they staying viable? You know, I don't understand it. Is it manipulation of, you know, their stocks in the market or these hedges that they make, or, you know, if we want to talk about derivatives too? But, you know, the Forbes article again was just disturbing, because if you're even making the connection from Enron to Chesapeake, that's a red flag.
Well, certainly. No, that's certainly the case. I mean, cash in at $2 billion and the cash out at $12 billion. I mean, you know, I mean, I hear a lot of people say that, well, geez, you know, the government should be run more like a business. Well, like, certainly it's being run like Chesapeake, I'd say. So if that's your model, there you go. So the United States is currently being run the way that a business would be. So there you have it.
Well, I think we're getting ready to wrap up the show here. We're going over, and I'm going to actually share a poem that I wrote about fracking.
Oh, yeah. Express yourself, man.
Express yourself. Just, no, but I want to mention to our viewers again, June 17th, Sunday, on Father's Day. Family is very important, but there's, you know, people are going to be, it's a national call to Columbus to ban fracking with Josh Fox and Mark Ruffalo. So if you have the time, if you're around Columbus, please stop downtown, check it out. I believe it's going to be, you know, hopefully a protest to spark and enlighten people, if anything else, and instill some confidence that we can change things in Ohio.
Take Dad with you.
What's that?
Take Dad with you to Columbus. Well,
take Dad. You know, that's a whole other issue in itself. You know, I actually got one of my aunts to come and watch a screening of Split Estate, which was the start. I couldn't believe, because my family looked at me, you know, for the past year, I've all of a sudden become the black sheep. You know, I'm the crazy conspiracy, you know, activist. But I actually...
Well...
But no, perhaps my aunt would like to come down with us. You know, Tricky Dick met her, and she's becoming more informed. So that was a positive experience for me too. My family finally waking up and at least looking into things. It was nice. But Dad, I love you, and I also understand where you're coming from too. So I love you anyway, bud.
Just another quick plug. I know I think it was mentioned earlier before, but also today at Nemecilla Park,
yeah.
Juneteenth. Events, and so make it out there.
Yeah, we talked about that early on in the show. All right, so I'm going to read this poem for you folks. This is Mike Check, and this is pretty much just what I've been experiencing, what other people have been experiencing around the nation. It's just been motivating by, you know, this poem was motivated by educating myself, watching what's happening around Ohio, watching what's happening around Pennsylvania and the world. But it's called Drill the Baby Drill. A arriving by the truckloads, drilling in our backyards. How far must we let this go before they emulate scrapyards? Can you endure the injection wells, a possible parallel to Dante's hell? Can you endure 11 earthquakes while your child sits in grade school and the foundation shakes? Up from the south, like 49ers hunt gold, oil and gas mouths salivating as human rights were sold. The coughs are starting, but people don't know why. The headaches are occurring, but take two to get by. Wait, be aware before you take your meds. Smell the water, get it tested, because that's what Theo Colburn says. The corporatists are here, they bought offices downtown. The corporatists are here, they expect you to back down. Writing checks door to door. Oh, excuse me, folks, I'm sorry for one second. Writing checks door to door. Will you take the bait? Sucker, they own you for 40 years, regardless of what the lease states. Deceptive manipulation and experts in PR. Drilling creates jobs while she's admitted to the ER. The corporatists are here, corrupting local news. The corporatists are here, watch the article skew. Drips of chrismin slide down her nose, red forms on the floor. I had an epiphany, horrifically screaming, I can't take this much more. You gonna keep your dignity? Stand up for what we need? Because if we side with apathetic action, we just submitted hegemonically. The corporatists are here, they don't care about your health. The corporatists are here, they only care about their wealth. The corporatists are here. So there you go. Mic check at his finest.
Thank you.
My fracking poem. Wake up, folks, because this is reality. The corporatists are here. And we will leave you with our last musical song. I don't know if anybody's a fan
as opposed to the non-musical song.
Our last musical exit. I thought it was pretty fitting today. We got Dave Matthews, Don't Drink the Water.
Come now, come now, can you
souls.